into it in as much detail as the Shulchan Aruch, but at least, I will pass these out.
You're fine.
So, to answer your question, maybe the best thing for us to do is to simply read the 25th parak of Hilchos Shabbos of the Rambam. It will take us 10 or 15 minutes, and that will give us a summary of everything that we've done so far. So let me pass these out. They're not collated, so this is one page at a time.
Give you what?
111 and 113.
This 113. 111's over here. 112 is gone. 112.
I need a 112. 112. I have a rumble.
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Steele has the original. So
Anybody have any 112,
sir? Yeah, we can share.
Who has 112?
Okay.
Okay, and so instead of a summary, let's simply read the Rambam quickly without too much, too much time on. So to answer Mr. Weinstein's question, Rambam writes, Yesh kli, this is directed specifically to your question. Yesh kli shem lachto lehetev. A certain type of a utensil is called a kli shem lachto lehetev. And Rambam gives you the definition. For hu ha kli shem utar la'asot bo b'shabbat davar shenaaseh lo b'chol. In other words, this is a utensil whose main function is an act which is permissible on Shabbat. Kagon, for example, kos lishtot bo, the ka'ara le'achol bo, the sakin lachtof bo basar, the pap, the kornos lefgoa bo egozim v'chiyotze bo. In other words, a cup, a plate, a knife, a table knife, or a nutcracker, all of those are examples of a kli shem lachto lehetev. That's the first definition. V'yesh kli shem lachto le'isur. Another class of kelim are kelim whose principal purpose is to perform an act which is prohibited on Shabbat. V'u ha'kli she'asur la'asot bo v'shabbat davar she'na'aseh bo. Kegon machteshet v'rechayim, like a pestle and mortar or a mill. V'chiyotze behen she'asur lachtosh v'litchon v'shabbat. Since you're not allowed to grind on Shabbat, a mill would be an example of a kli she'malachto le'isur. Those are the two categories of utensils, and their laws are slightly different according to the final formulation of the law. And the law is, kol kli shemalachto lehetev. Vein haya shel eitz, o shel cheretz, o shel even, o shel matechet, doesn't matter what this utensil is constructed out of, as long as it's a kli shemalachto lehetev, mutal lekaltulo b'shabbat, one is allowed to carry it on Shabbat, vein b'shvil atzmo shel kli, whether to use the utensil, vein letzorach mekomo, vein letzorach gufo, or to protect it. In other words, there are three categories, okay? V'chol kli shem lachto le'isur, bein sh'ayah shel eitz, o shel cheretz, o shel avanim, o shel matechet, mutar l'taltalo b'shabbat, bein letzorach gufo, bein letzorach mekomo, aval b'shvil atzmo, ot shel kli asur. Okay, so the one thing that is prohibited is to carry a kli shem lachto le'isur for the protection of the utensil. You're allowed to carry a kli shem lachto le'isur to use it or to get rid of it and move it out of make place, but you're not allowed to carry it for its own protection. Now the Rambam gives some examples. Ketzad, metaltel hu et ha-ka'ara shel eitz lechol bo, o lishev b'mokomo, o kedei shelo tigane. You can take your salad bowl either to use it, to eat with, or to get it out of the way. It's occupying some space on the table, or you can bring it in from the porch because you're afraid that somebody will steal it. Any of those three things are permissible. V'zehu b'shvil atzma. That's what he means for its own good. V'chein im tiltel otam en achama kadosh shelo tityabesh v'tishaver, to get it out of the sun so it shouldn't crack, o menageshem kadosh shelo titapach v'tipaseh, or that it shouldn't warp in the rain. Hareza metaltel b'shvil atzma u'mutar m'pneishum lachto le'eteh. V'chein metaltel hu et arechayim v'et amachteshet. You can move the mill to use it as a stepping stone to get up onto the bed with. Or you can move the mill out of the way in order to sit on the place. In other words, if you left the TV out on the porch Friday afternoon, you're not allowed to bring it in Friday night or Shabbat. But if it's sitting on the table, you can move it off to make place. Okay? V'kol she'eino kli, anything that is not a utensil, kagon avanim, uma'ot, v'kinim, v'korot, in other words, stones or money or reeds or beams, u'kiyotzei bahem, asur l'taltalam, you're not allowed to carry. In other words, this whole law assumes that the object in question has the status of a kli. Even gedola or korah gedola, afal pi shehi netelet v'yasara b'nei adam, im yesh torat kli haleha metaltalin ota. If you have a large object, if it has acquired the status of a kli, doesn't matter how heavy it is, the difficulty attached to moving it is not relevant. What's relevant is whether it has the status of a kli. Dlatot habayit, afal pi shehein kleinim, kelim, things which are sort of on the borderline now between parts of household constructions and utensils. So even though you might consider the door of a house perhaps as a utensil, but since it's never meant to be carried and utilized in its own right, afal pi shehein kleinim, lo hukhanu letalteh, lefichach im nitparku afilu b'shabbat, ein metalteh otam. V'chein ha'afar v'ha'chol v'ha'meit ein mitizin otam in kolmat. Uven shmoneh chai, harehu ke'even v'asur l'taltalot. This, remember, was the common medical assumption that a child who's born after the eighth month of pregnancy is considered as not survivable. In other words, a child who was born after 7 months is considered viable, and a child who's born at term of 9 months is viable, but an 8 month infant is not considered as viable. This is not peculiar to Talmudic medicine. If you look, I think I pointed this out to you once, if you look at Leonardo da Vinci's anatomical drawings, his most famous drawing of the pregnant woman, he makes in his marginal comment in mirror writing to explain the fact that a child that's born to 8 months is not viable, whereas a child born to 7 or to 9 months is. This is a standard supposition of Galenic and even pre-Galenic Greek medicine. So, and it was still acceptable at the time of the Rambam. Okay. All right. Mutar l'taltel hakli afilu shelo l'tzarach tashmisho ela la'asot bo melacha shelo nase l'tashmisha. Ketzad, notel adam kornus lefzo bo agozim, kordom lachtof bo dveila, magira legarer bo et advina, you can take a saw in order to slice the cheese, magrefa legrof bo et agrogeret, you can take a rake that would normally be used to rake the coals out of the oven, but in order to rake up the bits of food, et harachat et amazleg, letet elav ochel et atan, את הקוש ואת הקרקר לפתחובו, מחת של צקאים לפתוח בו את הדלת, את המחתשת לשבע לה, וכן כל כיוצא בו. In other words, והוא מטלטל אדם מחת של יד השלמה לטול בו את הקוץ. the person can take a needle to remove a splinter. Aval im nitel ha-katzeh ha-nakuv shela, o et ha-katzeh ha-chad shela, ein metaltelin otah. Remember, so the Rambam is deciding the halacha against the Gemara that we studied last week, that once it loses its status of a utensil, ve'im ha'ita golem v'adayin lo nikva mutal v'taltelah. That's a little difficult, but let's not go into it. Kol kli shemakfir alav shema yiftachu damav. Any utensil which is a specialized utensil, in other words, a precious utensil that's normally used for a special purpose, and you're worried that if you normally use it, it will become ruined. Kagon kelim hamukatzim leschora v'kelim hayikarim biyoter shemakfir alayhem shema yipsedu asur letaltelan b'shabbat v'zeh hanikra mukta machmat chisaron tit. In other words, you would not be able to use a very expensive surgeon scalpel as a table knife, for example, on Shabbat. In other words, something which is an expensive utensil, then that in the normal course of events you would be concerned about using it for anything other than its dedicated purpose, you're not allowed to use on Shabbat, and that's an example of mukta machmat chisaron kis, kagon hamesa hagadol, like a large knife, the yatei shel macharesha, or the blade of a plow, the sakin shel tabachim, or the knife that's used to slaughter animals, the cherev shel ushbachim, the chitzin acharashim, the kornus shel besamim, the kiyotzeba. Okay. So that's the one exception to Rabbi Shimon's position, namely, we decide that mukta machmat chisaron kis is prohibited. Kol kli shehukta machmat ha'isur asur letaltelo. The second exception to Rabbi Shimon's position, where we decide like Rabbi Meir, remember there's a three-way machloket in the Gemara, and we're taking the intermediate position here. Kol kli shehukta machmat ha'isur asur letaltelo. Kagon ne'er shehid liku bo b'shabbat, either the lamp or the lamp holder, the candelabra, the shulchan shayu alav ma'ot, af al pi shekvar shakavah haner o shenachlu ha-ma'ot asur letaltelah. Shekol kli shaya asur letaltelo bein hashmashot, ne'esor letaltelo kol ha-shabbat kula, af al pi shehalach ha-davar shegoram lo ha-isur. This is the principle. Something has the status of mutzah Friday night, then it retains that status of mutzah for the rest of the day. Again, Rabbi Shimon would not agree to this principle in such a broad generality, but that's our halacha. Aval kli hamutzah machmat miusol, kigon ner yashan shel nef, uklei hatzoa, uchiyotze behen, mutal atatalam b'shabbatim hutzvachlam, a chamber pot, or a lamp which was a neft lamp which was fouled from the oil, from the neft in it, all of those you're allowed to carry on Shabbat. Kol hakelim hanitalim b'shabbat shenitparku dlatehem, kagon dlatot seida teva umigdal, ben shenitparku b'shabbat, ben shenitparku b'shabbat, mutar l'tatlan otan dlatot, they retain their identity as a kli, v'chein kol hakelim hanitalim b'shabbat shenishparu, ben kodem b'shabbat, ben b'shabbat, shivrehem nitalim, v'hu shiyeh shivrehem osin me'ein malachtan. This is more or less akin to the principle in Hilchot Tumah, that a kli that retains the ability to function in a fashion similar to its original purpose does not lose its capacity of acquiring tuma, that is, it does not lose its status as tea. Ketzad shivrei ariva lechsot bo et achavit, shivrei zkuchit lachasot bo et pi hapach, v'chein kol hiyotzei bohem. Aval im ein hashvarim ruyin l'mochachal, asur l'taltelah. That's like, as an example. Kol kisuyei hakelim l'tulam shabbat, v'hu shiyesh terat kuy aleihem. היה כלי מחובר בקרקע כגון חבית התמונה בארץ, אם יש בכיסוי של הבית אחיזה מטלטלין אותה ואם לאו אין מטלטלין אותה. וכן כיסויי הקרקעות כגון בורות, חריצין, אין מטלטלין כיסוי שלהם, אלא אם כן יש לו בית אחיזה. In other words, a manhole cover with a handle that means that you normally frequently take it off, but the ones like in the street, which are not adjusted to normally be removed on Shabbat, you can't take them off. כיסוי התנור, אך בי שאין לו בית אחיזה, מוטל תלתלו. שני דברים, אחד אסור לתלתלו ואחד מוטל לתלתלו, והיה סמוכים זה לזה, או זה על זה, או זה בזה, ובזמן שמטלטלין אחד מהם יטלטל לשני, אם היה צריך לדבר שמותר לטלטלו, מטלטלו, אף על פי שדבר שאסור לטלטלו, מטלטל עמו. This is the principle of טלטול מהצד, is מותר. ואם צריך לטלטל דבר אסור, לא יטלטלו באותו דבר המותר. כיצד? פגש היה תמונה בתבן וחררה שהייתה גבי גחלים, טלפון בקושר בקרקר ונטלן, אף על פי שהתבן והגחלים ננערים. בשבת בשעת התין נטילה, וכן לפת או תמונית שהיו תמונים באפר ומצאת עלים מגולים, שמתן בשבת בעלה שלהם, אף על פי שהאפר ננער. This is again, principle of טלטול מן הצד is not considered טלטול. אבל אם היה כיכר או תינוק על גבי האבן או על גבי הקורה, לא יטלטל את האבן או הקורה בכיכר ותינוק שיש עליו, וכן כיוצא בזה. נוטל אדם את בנו שיש עליו גלגולין עליו האבן בידו, אבל לא דינר, שאם ייפול הדינר יתמנו האב בידו. In other words, even though the child is carrying a rock and the rock is מוקצה, the fact that the child is holding onto the rock doesn't make it prohibited. However, if he's holding a coin, the chances are that if he were to drop the coin, the father would pick it up. כלכלה שהייתה נקובה וסתם נקב שלה באבן, מוטל לטלטלה, שראי האבן נעשה כדות. חבית ששכח אבן על פיה מטה על צידה והיא נופלת, הייתה בין החביות והאבן עליה מגביעה למקום אחר ומטה על צידה שם והאבן נופלת. וכן השוכח מאוד על הקר וצריך לקר, נוער את הקר והן נופלות. וכן אם צריך למקום הקר ונוטל את הקר ומאות עליו, אבל נניח את המאות מערב שבת על הקר, נניח האבן על פי אחר שראה על צירון טלטלן, אפילו נפלו המאות באבן שראה נעשו בסיס לדבר האיסור. אז again, it's the principle of מידי להתקצוי לבין השמשות להתקצוי לכל יום. Okay, let's skip a little bit. Let's go to the last page. I would like to get back to the end. That's a notlin. Kli tachat ha-delef in mefalei ha-kli shofet v'shoneh v'eino nimna, v'shu ya-delef ro'ui lo chitza, aval amene ro'ui eino t'nim. V'in natan mutar l'taltaleh v'mayim ha-musim shuva she'ein osin gerav shal rei l'chat chila. So I guess that should be... חבית של חבל שנשברה מביא כלי ומניח עליה את ספר ספר, בהמה שנפלה לבור או לעמת המים, הוא יכול לתאם בה את פרנסתה במקום ופרנסים אותה עד מוצאי שבת, את כולה סקשן, ואף על פי שמבטל כלי מהחנות, שהיא משליקו לבור לתוך המים, פני צער בעל חיים לא גזור, ועשו לעלותה בידו, וכן אין עוקפים בהמה וחיה ועוף וחצר, ודוחין אותו עד שיקנחו ומגלבין הגלים בסייחים. תנגולת שברכה אין מרדין אותה בני שנתמתת מהיד למצוא אגפי הנפלשים, אבל דורכין אותה עד שתיכנס. Okay, so in general, a quick summary of the Hilchot Muchtzah, so we get a general picture of the laws. Now, I don't believe we actually studied the Gemara yet, so let's make a quick review of the Gemara from the beginning of the Mishnah until the end of the second page. So, B'maya Skinan, the Gemara says, what... This Beitzah and Odovi Yom Tov, which Beit Shammai says Teyachel, or Beit Hillel says Lo Teyachel, what is it talking about? The Maya Skina. Ilema B'tanagolet Omedet Lachila. Ma Tamai Hu De Beit Hillel Uchla De Ifratu. If this is a hen which is normally raised for food, since you're allowed to eat the hen on Yom Tov, we're not talking about Shabbat, we're talking about Yom Tov, it would be permissible to slaughter the hen and therefore cook the hen, so therefore why shouldn't you be allowed to eat the egg? If you're allowed to eat the egg inside the chicken, when you kill the chicken, why shouldn't you be allowed to eat the egg if it was laid? So why my time I had the Beit Hillel, uchla di ifratu. It's just a piece of food that fell off from another piece of food. Ela b'tanagolet avodet l'gadel beitzim. It's talking about a hen which was kept to raise eggs, and therefore there was a deliberate intent not to use this hen as a foodstuffs, and therefore it did not have the status of foodstuffs, and therefore it should be muktza. Matai mai the Beit Shammai muktzahi. Umai kosher dilma Beit Shammai let lahu muktza. Perhaps Beit Shammai reject the notion of muktza. Kasalka daitim afilu leman deshavi the muktza, that even those people who reject the general notion of muktza benolad asor. Since this was something that was created a new object that came into being, it might be prohibited as muktzah, of course, even according to the people that are lenient with muktzah. In other words, that no one would go so far as to be lenient in the laws of muktzah to the extent of allowing no law. That's the hypothesis. My tamayu de Beit Shammai, amar Rav Nachman, la'olam v'tanogel v'ta'omedet l'kadel Beit Sim, u'de'itle muktzah itle no law, u'de'letle muktzah letle no law. In other words, there's no distinction between nolad and muktzah. Beit Shammai k'Rabbi Shimon, u'Beit Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, according to this principle, then Beit Shammai goes according to the position of Rabbi Shimon, who's lenient, who sort of essentially rejects almost all of the laws of muktzah, and Beit Hillel, who are the machmirim, in this particular group of instances, go according to Rabbi Yehuda. Umi Amar Rav Nachman Hachi. Is Rav Nachman really of that opinion that Beit Shammai goes according to Rabbi Shimon and Beit Hillel goes according to Rabbi Yehuda? Otnan Beit Shammai Umi Magbihim Eyal HaShulchan Atzamot Kalipim Ubeit Hillel Umi Masalvek Et HaTavla Kula Umi Na'ara. Beit Shammai allow you to pick up the various bones, etc. And Beit Hillel say that you have to sort of shake the table or and get rid of them. Yom Rav Nachman, Anan Ein Lanu Ela Beit Shammai K'Rabbi Yehuda U'Beit Hillel K'Rabbi Shimon. Rav Nachman wanted to reverse the position and declare that Rav Beit Shammai agreed with Rav Yehuda and Beit Hillel K'Rabbi Shimon. Amalachar Rav Nachman, Gabi Shabbat, the Satam Lantano K'Rabbi Shimon. As far as the laws of Shabbat are concerned, where the Stam Mishnah is like Rav Shimon, it's none. Since the Stam Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Shimon in being lenient in Muktzah, Mokim la Beit Hillel Rabbi Shimon. Aval Gabi Yom Tov, the Satam Lam Tanak Rabbi Yehuda, the Tnan, Ein Mavakim Eitzim Min HaKorot, Velo Min HaKorah Shenish Barabi Yom Tov. You can't chop off a piece of a beam for firewood on Yom Tov, right? Or from a ceiling beam. Since this was set aside for some other purpose, and there you would not be allowed to use it for firewood on Yom Tov. So the Gemara asks, "Michti manstam ela matnitin?" Who is the editor of the Mishnah here? Only was Rabbi. Maishna b'Shabbat asatam lan k'Rabbi Shimon, or Maishna b'Yom Tov asatam lan k'Rabbi Yehuda. If you have a single editor of the Mishnah, why is it that in Masechet, as far as the laws of Shabbat are concerned, the Stam Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Shimon to be lenient in the laws of Muktzah, and in Yom Tov, the Stam Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Yehuda to be more machmir in the laws of Mishnah? So the Gemara answers, Amri, an interesting answer, slightly strange, but interesting, Amri Shabbat Tachamira V'lo'oti L'zlutu Levei Satan Lam K'Rabbi Shimon. Most people are aware and are careful about the laws of Shabbat, therefore you don't need to be overly cautious in the laws of Muktzah, and you can be lenient in the laws of Muktzah on Shabbat because people as a whole know that on Shabbat you're not allowed to do any melacha. And therefore, on Shabbat, the laws of Muktzah are lifted, more or less. You take Rabbi Shimon's position. Yom Tov, the kil, va'ati l'zulzulebe. On the other hand, on Yom Tov, people tend not to take it as seriously as Shabbat. Satam lam k'Rabbi Yehuda da machmir. So that's the Gemara's final conclusion, that according to this opinion, Rav Nachman's opinion, the laws of the Mishnah is talking about the laws of Muktzah, and the reason, and basically there's a difference between Yom Tov and Shabbat. On Yom Tov, we tend to be more machmir. On Yom Tov, we tend to be more machmir because most people are not so serious about Yom Tov, and on Shabbat, we tend to be more mekel. And basically, that's the halach. So, but now the Gemara goes back. B'mai ukumta b'tanagol etalmedet l'gadel beitzim u'mishum muktzah. If you're saying that we're talking about a hen which normally lays eggs, and we're talking about the laws of muktzah here, ihochi adeniflegi b'beitzah liflegu b'tanagol. If it's the laws of muktzah here, then why do you need the egg altogether? You can simply say that if you had a hen which you kept to raise eggs and then all of a sudden you decided that you wanted to slaughter that hen, you had an additional guest you weren't aware of, so you're going to take a hen out of the egg-laying row and bring it in and cook it. For simple, the hen itself is mukta. What do you need the egg for? The egg is an extra ingredient here. If we're talking about the laws of mukta, the hen itself is mukta. Why do you need the egg? It should say, Tanagola ta'omedet l'gadel beit sim, beit shamay omun te'achel, beit hilel omun lo te'achel. Why do you need the egg altogether? Ad ihachi adamiflegi l'beit sa l'flugu v'tanagola. So the Gemara says, l'hodiacha kochan de beit shamay. T'benolad shari. That even an egg, you might have thought that the laws of mukta, that Beit Shammai was lenient on the laws of Muktza, but would be more machmir and something that was created new, with no lad, like an egg. So it tells you that even the egg is permissible according to Beit Shammai. Ve'lefluge betanugolet lohodir ha'kolcho deveit hilel. But let's reverse that. If the argument is only on the egg, you might think that therefore that Beit Hilel, who would be machmir, would not be machmir on the tanugol. The b'muktza asu v'chitei makoch de'etero odik v'niflugu v'talvayu tanugolet omedet l'gadel beitzim hiu beitzata beitshamay omim te'achel v'itamel lo te'achel. So on that basis, the Gemara said is not too happy with this answer. Not too happy with the position that the Gemara is talking about a laws of muktza. Elo amar Rabba. So now Rabba offers his famous or alternative position. Ela amar Rabba la'olam v'tanagolet ha'omedet la'achila. We're not talking about the laws of muktza at all here. U'v'yom tov shachal liyot achar ha'shabbat askin. And this Mishnah, even though it doesn't say so, is talking about a holiday that comes out on Sunday. U'mishum hachana. And this is because of the laws of Hachana. Because Sava Rabba, Kol Beit Sadim Mityaldahe Idna Me Etmol Gamrala, that any egg that is laid today was Sunday. Completed yesterday. Laid on Sunday was completed on Shabbat. And we had a long description from Mel from the Scientific American saying that this is basically what happens. If you define a Gamra to mean leaving a follicle, then the egg yolk leaves the follicle 24 hours before it is laid, and the only thing that's added is the albumen and the shell in the 24-hour period. So if that's the definition, the Rabba l'tane, and Rabba is going to his physician, the Amar Rabba, Mai dechtiv ha'ya b'yom ha'shishi ve'echinu et asher yaviyu, chol mechin l'shabbat v'chol mevin l'yom, l'yom tov, ve'en yom tov mechin l'shabbat ve'en shabbat mechina l'yom tov. Let's take a look at Rashi. The chol beit sadim mit yaldaha idna. Do we have it? Let's take a look at Rashi. The chol beit sadim mit yaldaha idna me etmol gamrala. Rashi says, so what? I mean, the simple translation of vehechinu et asher yavil means that the people should go up and gather the man on Friday for Shabbat. It has nothing to do with natural events. So Rashi is aware of that difficulty and says, V'afal gav dividei shamayim hu, even though this is not human intervention, the simplest interpretation of the pasuk of Erechinu et asher yaviu would mean that a positive commandment that the Jews should go out and gather the man, an X proportion of man, on Friday for Shabbat. You might extend that to say that by virtue of the positive commandment, if they didn't go out and gather it on Friday, then it would be prohibited if they gathered it on Shabbat itself, even for the next day. But that all of that is talking about human activity, not natural events. So Rashi is aware of that difficulty, and he says, "Ve'afal gav de'videi shemayim hu asur de'inan kol su'udat Shabbat v'su'udot yom tov shiyehei muzmanot u'muchanot neba'od yom shel chol." So this is a special status of the meals of Shabbat and Yom Tov, that they have to be prepared, at least prepared in some abstract sense, because on Yom Tov you're allowed to fry the egg, you're just not allowed to eat an egg which has been completed the day before. They should be prepared in some abstract sense a day of Chol. And notice what's troubling Rashi, of course, is the following fact. Why are you allowed to eat an egg on Sunday? That was laid. After all, it was finished on Saturday. So Rashi has to add to us that this notion of hachana only applies to a meal which has some intrinsic importance. The Sunday morning brunch doesn't have the status of a Seudat Shabbat, and therefore it doesn't require hachana. And therefore, since it doesn't require hachana, absence of hachana bidei chol is not something that makes it prohibited. V'rabba l'asar b'hachana she'ena bidei shamayim v'yadayim amash, l'ta'amei d'amar rabba b'psachim. He says this, v'yalif mehocha, Rashi adds a parenthetical remark, the muktza d'yorayt. Remember, last week we studied that there were three opinions in the Rishonim that we studied as to what the origin of Muktzah was. Of those three, the first that we studied was the She'iltot, and the She'iltot was of the opinion that the laws of Muktzah were derived from the laws of Hachon. And so we see that Rashi basically agrees with the She'iltot. Namely, that the laws of Muktzah are derived from the laws of Hachana. We don't need, Rashi didn't have to tell us this right here in this moment, but he's giving us an interesting parenthetical remark. That's Rashi's interpretation of the origin of the laws of Muktzah. Okay. Vehechinu vehezminu. Kegon mikan ani okel machar. That the word hechinu cannot really mean, Rashi says, actual physical preparation. Ve'im yishum hachana b'yadayim. If we're talking about physical preparation, by cooking, then they should cook everything the previous day. As far as Yom Tov is concerned, you're allowed to cook. Ela hazmona bepeka ma'uchtiv b'yom hashishi ustam shishi cholgu. Okay, and now Rashi repeats for us. V'achshava rachmana l'seudat Shabbat. The Torah attaches importance to the Seudah of Shabbat, she yazminena miba'od yom v'chol, that it should be in this abstract sense prepared on a previous day, and that previous day itself should be chol. Ve'en yom tov mechin l'shabbat, ve'yom tov nami karui shabbat. Rashi now has to add something that wasn't at all clear, that the extra portion of man, the double portion of man, fell also on Erev Yom Tov. The Torah doesn't tell us that. Uviyom Tov Nami Kavui Shabbat, Uba'ayas Udato Hazmana, Vazmanato B'chol. And now, again, to explain to us what is an obvious difficulty, Rashi repeats for the third time. Aval Su'udat Chol Lo Chashiva. Sunday morning brunch is not considered important. And therefore, the notion of hazmana doesn't attach to a meal that you're eating on Sunday, unless that Sunday happened to be a Yom Tov. Hilkach be'echad b'shabbat ba'alma letlam l'meisar beitzah shenol dabe. Therefore, there's no reason to prohibit an egg that was laid Sunday morning mishum li'atkin b'idei shamayim. V'su'udat chol lo isfuchar achmana zimun mi ba'od yom. Because the su'udat chol does not require hazmana, to lo shayach ba muktza, because the whole notion of muktza cannot apply on a Yom Tov. So Rashi is telling us the same thing three or four times. I can only conclude from this that he really wasn't convinced by this argument, that he had to repeat it three or four times to get it across. Okay. So, but now the Gemara asks, all right, this is all talking about a holiday, a Yom Tov, that occurred on a Sunday. Okay. Yom Tov shebikon. All right. Amalei Abaye elama ata Yom Tov ba'alma tishteri. If this is the case, suppose that the holiday occurs on Monday, not on Sunday. Why shouldn't you be allowed to eat the egg then? Zera mishum yom tov achar Shabbat. We're worried about what would happen if you allow a person to eat an egg on a holiday that occurred on a Monday, he might also eat it on a holiday that occurred on a Sunday. Shabbat alma tishteri. What about every Shabbat? That's very rare that you're going to have a holiday on Friday. What? I mean, there are certainly at least 51 or 52 other Shabbatot in the year on which the holiday will not occur on a Friday. So the Gemara says, Zera mishum Shabbat achar yom tov. Is there such a gzera? V'atanya ha-shochet et ha-nagolet ha-matzabo be'tzim nurot mutarat ochlan b'yom tov. Why should you not also prohibit the eggs that are found in the chicken? Why do they have to be laid? Amar lei beitzim gemurot meimon milter lo shchicha. Milter lo shchicha lo gazgu bal rabban. Okay, let's take a look at Rashi. Umi gazvinan. Umi achmur rabbanan beveitzal nigzor hetera mishum asisur. Aba hatanya, etc. In tomar, bahavi legzera legzera. Perhaps this should be only gzera legzera. Da hanachte mit yaldin biyomehem nami enan asurot el mishum gzera diyom tovacha ha-shabbat. After all, the egg that's that is laid on a regular holiday, if it wasn't on a Sunday, is only prohibited mishum because of gzera. Then why? Then the second level here, where you're talking about an egg that's actually found in the hen, so the Gemara says, "Toritz hamotzi lo kumi biyom tovacha ha-shabbat." The hashta ikel lemigzer atu hanach the mityaldin biyomehem. Vashmein and hachmat nikin da afilu biyom tovacha ha-shabbat mutarot ha'il ve'enem. Nolodot mishum hanach the mityaldin lechem lemigzer mishum demiltad lo shichehi b'shem rabbein. Now, as another important parenthetical remark for us, a little bit strange, for her, since he brought up the topic of gazrin and gzera l'gzera, v'ha de amrian b'kuli hashas she'ein gazrin gzera l'gzera, this general principle that we find all over, that we don't make a gzera l'gzera, may haikro nafka, we learn it from this pasuk, u'shmartem et mishmarti, asu mishmeret, klomar gzera l'mishmarti l'tavati. Lo mishmeret li mishmeret, shelo yasu gzera li gzera. Okay. All right. So now the Gemara goes ahead and says, offers two additional alternative explanations. Rav Yosef amar gzera mishum perot hanoshrim. That this gzera is mishum perot hanoshrim. Since you're not allowed to eat fruit that has fallen off the tree on Shabbat, okay? Because you might gzera that you might go and pick the fruit off the tree. Therefore, the Gemara says that an egg that's laid by a chicken is, in some sense, similar to an apple that's fallen off the tree. And since you're not allowed to eat an apple that's fallen off the tree on Shabbat, you're also not allowed to eat a fruit, an egg that has been laid on Shabbat. Amar le Abaye, Perot hanoshrim tam amai. Why are you not allowed to eat perot hanoshrim? Now you have to look down in the Gemara because it's, the next page is not. In my original handout, okay. Perot hanoshrim tam amai. What is the reason that you're not allowed to eat fruit that's fallen off the tree? Gzera shema ya'ale v'yitlo. Because you might climb up the tree and pick it off. Hu gufat gzera. After all, the prohibition of not eating the fruit because you might climb up the tree is in itself only a gzera. Va'anan nekum v'nigzor gzera l'gzera. And are we going to go and establish a secondary gzera l'gzera? So the Gemara says, Kula hadok zerai. This is all was encompassed in the original zera. If there was originally a piece of legislation prohibiting the eating of a piece of fruit that fell off the tree on Shabbat, then included in that, at that time, of that legislation, was anything that was similar to it, like an egg being laid on Shabbat. That's answer number three, explanation number three of our Mishnah. Explanation number four of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yitzchak amar, gzera mishum mashkin shezavu. That just, you're not allowed to consume juices which have exuded from fruit on Shabbat. Similarly, an egg which is laid by a hen is not fruit that was exuded. Amar le abaye mashkin shezavu time amar, gzera shema yisfot, because you might actually squeeze. He gufa gzera, v'anan nekum v'nigzor gzera l'gzera. So the Gemara answered, kula chada gzera. Okay. So those were the four possible answers of explanations of the Gemara. No one of them is particularly very happy. The first one was Mukta, the second one was Hachana, the third one is Kevot Shenashru, and the fourth one was Mashkin Shazaru. The Gemara says, Kulot Rav Nachman Lo Amri, Kikushin. Everyone does not accept Rav Nachman's answer because of the difficulties that the Gemara raised with Rav Nachman. Namely, if this is a din of Mukta, you don't need the egg. It should refer to the chicken, or at least certainly mention the chicken. Those who don't accept Rabba's explanation, that's because they don't accept this principle. Hachana let lo. They don't accept this principle that there exists such an Isur as Hachon. Elo Rab Yosef, my time alo amak Rab Yitzchak. Why doesn't Rab Yosef agree with Rab Yitzchak about Amar le beitza uchla uperot uchla lafuki mashkin belav uchla? Rav Yitzchak matam alo amak Rav Yosef manoch ha-beitza blua u-mashkin bluin lafuki perot demiglu v'kain. Va'af Rav Nachman Rav Rav Yochanan savar gzeira mishen mashkin shazavu. Let's now spend a little bit of time discussing this issue of gzeira like gzeira. So let me pass out something on that. Just the Gemara in Chulin. And especially it's also important. Because this is a difficult subject here, let's pass this around. That's the Gemara Chulin. Yes?
If you hold that Mukta comes from Achana, then what's the difference between answer number one and answer number two?
Oh, the difference is that answer number one is talking about an Isur Bioraita of Hachana, not some derivative Isur. In other words, that it is actually the case of Hachana. Rashi is telling us that the laws of Mukta are all derived from Hachana. Some of them, as we saw in the first Shiur, are perhaps derived on the level of an Isur Bioraita, and others are derived on the level of an Isur Rabbana. But if you agree with this principle of Hachana, then according to Rabba, this egg that's laid on Sunday is actually Asur because of this peculiar Isur of Hachana, not from any derivative one at all. Let's read the Mishnah and the Gemara. This is the beginning of the eighth parak of Chulin. Kol habasa asur levashel b'chalav. Well, you're not allowed to cook any meat in milk. Chutz mipsar dagim v'chadavim, with the exception of fish or grasshoppers, or locusts. V'asur lahalot im hagvina al hashulchan, you can't even serve it with cheese at the table. Chutz mipsar dagim v'chadavim. Hanodeo min habasar mutar v'psar dagim v'chadavim. So the Mishnah is establishing the principle somehow or other that we sort of are accustomed to this very day, that fish is not considered as meat. I don't know how acceptable it is to modern-day vegetarians, so I guess there's a difference of opinion amongst them as well, but the Mishnah draws the line between fish and fowl, not between fowl and meat. So the Gemara says, Ha'ov asur midyaraita. Does that imply that chicken and milk is prohibited in the Midyaraita? Kaman, the lok Rabbi Akiva. This must not go according to Rabbi Akiva. The Iku Rabbi Akiva hamar chayav va'uf eina min haTorah. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that game or fowl are not prohibited to cook with milk min haTorah. Eima seifa hanodeh min habasar mutar b'bsar dagim v'chagayim ha'uf asur atan Rabbi Akiva. The Amar Kol Nili Dimimach Alei Shliach Bar Minehu. Anything, as far as the Darim are concerned, if the Shliach has to come back and ask for further instructions, it's not considered as that item. Titanya Hanodem and Hayerek Mitab Gulyin, Rabbi Okiva Oseh, Amar Rabbi Okiva Halo Omer Adam Lishlucho, Taklanu Yerek, Rabbi Omer Lo Matzati Ela Gulyin. Amar Lahen Ken Adaval, Kulum Omer Lo Matzati Ela Kitniot, Ela Shadulin Bekal Yerek, Vein Kitniot Bekal Yerek. So the Gemara says, Reisha Rav Ananda Seifa Rav Yakiva, Amar Rav Yosef, Rebbe,
ונעשים על העליבה דדפנאי, ונדרים סבל לפי רבי עקיבא, ובשר וחלב סבלו כרבנן. ורשי אמר, כולו רבי עקיבא, והוקי כאמר, כל הבשר אסור לרשל בחלב, not allowed to cook any meat in milk, מהן מדברי תורה ומהן מדברי סופרים, some on an איסור דרייתא and some on an איסור דרבנן, חוץ מבשר דגים וחגבים, with the exception of fish and locust, שאינם לא מדברי תורה ולא מדברי סופרים. ויאסור להעלות על השולחן, אמר רבי יוסי, שמע מיני בשר עוף וחלב דרייתא. This must imply that בשר עוף וחלב is דרייתא. ואיס על כדאית אחתר רבנן, אכילה גוף הגזרה, after to eat meat and milk together, is in itself only a גזרה דרבנן. What is prohibited in דרייתא is to cook meat and milk together, or to eat meat and milk that's been cooked together. But to have a cold corned beef and cheese sandwich is not asur midiyoraita, it's only asur midirabanan. A cheeseburger might be asur midiyoraita, but a cold corned beef and cheese sandwich would only be asur midirabanan. And if that's the case, yisal kadaita rabban achila gufa gzera ba'anuna nigzor ha'ala'a atot achila, then why shouldn't you be able to put it on the table? After all, the eating of it itself is only an Yisod Rabbanah. So the Gemara says, Umad minat timot lo gazirin zeirah lo gzeirah detnan, etc., etc. Let's take a look in Tosfos. Uminat timot lo gazirin zeirah lo gzeirah. Tosfos here essentially raises a question and then throws up his hands. Uminat timot lo gazirin zeirah lo gzeirah. The Hama Mokhamot, in many places in Shas, the Gemara asks this question. He grew from zero, but only come when he zog zero with zero. The pair kama de shabbat, the pair kama de lifin, the reish beitza, the argument of the Gemara that we just studied. Bahacha ba'inan latuye raya le'inan zera da halal ato akhila. Ve'yesh mekomot nami de gazminan zera le zera v'lo chayshina. And there are other places, which Tosfos doesn't bother to list for us, where the Gemara doesn't even bother to raise the question of zera le zera. And the Gemara says, "Ain the Tosfot says, Ain ledamok zerok chachamim zuruzu elavam kamot shashas mendama." So Tosfot says, basically, we cannot make any sense out of this. Sometimes.